part 23 of the Eckhart book is Headline: A Train on Wheels. I could see we were going toward a tunnel. We came out on an underground walkway. I stopped and asked, where are we going? To where we will find the ship. But isn't it up above there? And where and there and here are we going down inside instead of up? He smiled and patted me on my back with his left hand, saying, do not worry, as I know the way. Without knowing what to say, I followed him. We went down some 10 steps. There the stairs doubled back to the left. After 5 or 6 more steps, I commenced to hear the voices of many people. When we got to that level, he looked at me and smiled significantly. I smiled back and said, now I understand how from here it is easier and more rapid to get to where we left the ship. What I saw in front of me was one of the many things that an intelligent people can do to efficiently use the space when there is very little. How could I ever suppose that there beneath that building there were various trams running from one place to another full of passengers? However, it was the first vehicle with wheels I had seen on a cart full of passengers. We went to a platform where some of these trams passed. When we got there, I saw a cork pull down one small lever of the many that saw hanging there. The tram stopped, opening a door at the same time. He gave me a sign to go aboard, and upon closing the door, the tram began to move at more or less 30 kilometers per hour. I would like to clarify that it was a tram, yes, but different in several aspects from those here on Earth. It ran upon tracks. I could not see what size its wheels were. The long cars were not divided. Each seat held 2 people, something like a tram car. It was logical that traveling underground was discovered. The motor, instead of being on one end, was in the middle of the cars. It made almost no noise. When it began to move, I looked to the front and back, and as I saw nobody controlling it, I asked, who is driving this? A cork responded, we are. It is us, each one who embarks. But how? It is completely automatic, as you can see. Each of these platforms, from where platforms every 100 or so meters from each other, the same being is some 20 meters long by 4 or 5 wide, has a lever like that. He pointed out one near a column on the platform. The passenger is there on the platform, and when he sees the approach of the seat where he wants to embark, he presses a button on the column and the lever moves forward to the front, which is going to touch the door of the desired vehicle. This then stops, opening the door. When the door is then closed again, a connection is made once more, putting the vehicle in motion. But you, sir, did not use the button to advance the lever of the column? No, I did not use it. But then, it is that we can lower it. the lever directly by hand without using the column bottom. Only women and children use the whole system because they do not have a strong enough arm to knock the door open, and it would not disconnect the motor. Now I understand. To where does this tram go? This only makes stops from one point to another in the building. I have mentioned this, where they had four lines that ran parallel, two on each side, with a walkway platform over the middle, which served both lines, and one on each side of the building, which serves the other two lines. Now, as I have told you, in many of our cities we have made roads up to 500 kilometers, and they travel at great velocity. Are all the subways like this one? Yes, almost all. Why don't these develop more velocity? Because here, as you know, it is a place of rest, for which there is no need for hurry. Is it the same? Is it the same? Can you explain to me how they make the turn around at the end of the line? Or do they come back by another line? Each of these four travel in on one line. When they get to the end of the line, they touch a key which then makes them operate in reverse. Does the motor work in both directions? No, the drive is reversed. Is this powered by solar energy also? Yes, it is. If there is no passenger waiting, do they still run? Yes, they run as I explained. When it gets to the end of the line, it returns automatically as much in one direction as the other. It's a marvel, I responded, sighing deeply. Besides having no conductor, it consumes no fuel. I was so intrigued that it seemed to me as if we were going to the end of the line. With all this, I did not know, nor could I even guess, where we could have to stop to get to our aircraft. With a cork, this was not the case. Upon arriving at a certain platform, he lowered a small lever to the door, and the tram stopped, and we got off. From there, we went up a stair identical to that which we had descended before, and came out walking on the walkway. Upon getting there, I thought we had returned to the place we had started from, but as I knew that a cork knew what he was doing, I followed his steps without any questions. We entered an elevator and went up to the disembarking house on the top of the building. When we got out, I felt the cold wind on my face and eyes. I looked around as at the hundreds of ships. I thought, I wonder how he is going to find ours. We went some 12 to 15 meters with him always paying attention to some scratches, but which certainly to him were numbers or letters quite legible, like those which we were standing above. Finally, we came up to one which he opened, and we climbed aboard. That was down on part 23. And we continue here directly to part 24. Headline, Briefing My Return. A cork went through the usual maneuvers as always, and in a few minutes we had left the 20 kilometers building far behind. Where are we going? I asked. To Tarmac, he responded. Yes, but I prefer us going directly to your house, or are we going... I interrupted the phrase, but he divined what I was about to say, and he responded. Well, if it is your own desire to shorten our return to Earth, we can go directly to the residence of the Son of the Sun and see what we can resolve. Sir, do you think that he will agree that our desire to leave and to depart before daybreak tomorrow? If the request is made by you, I believe he will then concur. Then wouldn't it be better if we went directly to his residence, because if he agrees, there will be time to prepare all for the departure, since certainly they are prepared to depart the morning after the night. Yes, I think the same. He had already lowered the two canopies away, and I was trying to quickly end this discussion to be able to see outside, trying to observe the cities that we were overflying. I'm not going to try to describe what the cities of Akkart looked like on the dark night, as did they all, flying some 2,000 to 4,000 meters above. It is entirely impossible for me. What I can say is that it made me remember a time when I was a boy and my parents were living in a hilly area with no level ground, and where new residents arrived daily. Consequently, they had to clear new areas of trees all the time. In August and September, on the sunny days, they burned off acres of forest. As we lived in a higher place, I, on the dark nights, spent hours contemplating the red of the burning fields, with the fires consuming the rest of the drying wood here and there. I did not like to see the fires consuming so much wood, since I have always loved nature and all its wonder. It pained me to see such beautiful trees, formerly so well canopied and green, laid waste and turned to ashes. But it was a pleasure to the eyes to observe the leaping flames in the dark night. The cities of Akkart looked very much like this, because of that flaming resplendence, and it was not the light that gave off that splendor, but the very walls themselves. I was so entranced by that beauty that I did not notice when we were already flying above Tarnuk, although that part of Akkart, like all of those cities, was almost identical with another. We went directly to the palace, let us say, of the governor, which I said of a palace there was nothing, since it was a building like all the others, in which the Son of the Sun occupied an apartment. Well, when we arrived on the roof of the building, it was like as if it were 7:30 in the evening here on Earth. Akkork expertly parked the ship, and we disembarked and headed immediately for the apartment of the Son of the Sun, following the same route we had used previously. This I could confirm because of certain details of the road we walked this time, as well as before, which did not go unnoticed by me. Upon arriving at the door, Akkork made the ball bell sound. We were met by the same helper who had attended us before. Akkork spoke with him a little, of which I could understand nothing, and then that one bowed respectfully and withdrew, leaving the door opened. Some 2 minutes passed, and then he returned smiling, and with a gesture invited us to enter. We went inside, and he indicated a sofa where we could sit. He spoke some words with Akkork, and then the youth directed us to another adjoining room. I was not very sure whether the Son of the Sun was in the house or not, but since he had not had already invited us to come in and sit down, it was to be supposed that the sun would arrive in any minute. But in view of my doubts, I asked, "Is the son of the sun here?" "Yes, he is finishing his meal." "Will he see us?" "Certainly he will." And together with his answer, he gave me a significant look, as if to say, "Why would he not see us?" Akolk had no more than finished his response than the son of the sun appeared, asking us to excuse him for the small delay, as if he smiled broadly. He greeted Akolk in their characteristic manner and nodded a kind of greeting toward me with his head, which I returned in the same form. Then the three of us sat down on the sofa where Akolk and I had been waiting before. They conversed in a frank and cheerful tone for some minutes. Then suddenly they looked at me, and Akolk translated the following question from the son of the sun: "Do you yourself want us to shorten your stay and return you to earth?" "If it is possible, I would like that," I responded. "Are you certain that it is not that you are fed up with us and our system?" "Absolutely. I could remain the rest of my life here, since I admire very much what I have here, but I have my family, and I can only think of them, which takes all the pleasure out of contemplating the wonderful and beautiful things that you have here on the cart. I can tell you also, never on earth have I been so well treated as I have been here, because I belong to the Legion of the Lost." "What is this Legion of the Lost?" "It is that I'm poor, and here on earth, and there on earth, only the rich are remembered." Thus, when Akolk translated my reply, he smiled with satisfaction, and crossing the fingers of his hands, he clapped the thick part of his palms one against the other 3 or 4 times and said, "It will be done. Your own will being to depart tomorrow before daylight in Turnuk. For it is also better to leave early, since with every instant that passes, the voyage becomes longer." "Yes, sir," I responded, as I thought. "What business is this that the voyage becomes longer? Being accustomed to my own trips by bus and on foot, I never thought at that moment that the planets are moving at different velocities in space." Finally, inside of me, I resolved to ask Akolk for an explanation at some more opportune time, while I was breaking my head with a problem considered simple for me. Akolk and the son of the sun were conversing about themselves. At a given moment, the son of the sun took a paper and marked something on it, and called the youth to whom he handed it. Then one withdrew through the door to the other room with a noticeable haste. Then the son of the sun said to me, "All will be arranged. I have just sent a letter to the Khan to make preparations for departure before the end of this night. You will make the trip in the same ship that brought you here." After Akolk had translated these words, the son of the sun spoke again, saying, "In accordance with our previous agreement, there remains still the end up to our guard day, and thus you can know some things with respect to us. However, since we have arranged to anticipate your return, I would like to make you an invitation, which I hope you will accept. despite knowing that you are very tired. After such a long day, still young for us. In compensation, it will be a long night to rest. When Akork translated this to me, I smiled without knowing if I should smile or cry. I thought, whatever he is about to invite, I will have to accept, since it could not be bad, because from a people like the Akkadians, I should not expect anything else. And convinced of this, I responded, whatever it is, I accept, even before you, sir, have said what it will be. He laughed with satisfaction and said, very well, I shall make ready. Akork will explain to you what is going to be. Then he went out to get ready. That was end of part 24. 21 minutes have been on this audio file, so I think we can read also part 25, headline A Sports Field. With no loss of time, I accosted Akork and said, what did he invite me to? Akork, enjoying my curiosity, said, do not worry, the Son of the Sun is not going to invite you to throw yourself over a precipice. Yes, but what is the purpose? It is that on the night before guard day, students from our schools take part in parades and various celebrations to the Son of the Sun. Parades with arms? No, in sports. I don't believe I have shown you any here yet, but we have various. No, you haven't shown me. I would like very much to see. Well, within moments, you are going to have the opportunity to see. What kind of sport are they going to present and where? Within a little time, you will know both of those things. At this time, the Son of the Sun entered, completely encaped, and commenced to speak to Akork. Almost at the same instant, through the front door came the youth, bringing an envelope in his hand, which he delivered to the Son of the Sun. The Sun opened it and withdrew from inside the envelope a white paper, apparently with nothing written on it, which he agitated in the air, and during the agitation there appeared symbols of theirs on the surface. When he stopped, that was what was a blank paper before now had a message on one side, which he read in a low voice. When he finished, he looked at Akork and said, all is in order. You can depart at the time arranged. When Akork told me this, I wanted to ask a question, but I could not because my voice died in my throat, and when I recuperated, we had already become separated from the Son of the Sun, following the corridor in the direction of the elevator, and then, in a weak voice, I asked, where are we going? To the sports field. But the Son of the Sun is not coming with us? No, he is going with his family in his solar ship. From there until we were above the city, I had a number of questions to ask, but with so many errors that I had already committed, I decided to calm myself to be able to better understand. Just as I opened my mouth to ask for an explanation about the magic paper to me, Akork said, it is there where we are going. That building? I indicated that one that covered more or less the two squares with 10 stories high. Yes, that one. When we approached, I thought we were going to land on top of it, but this did not happen. O'Cork made some maneuvers and we went to park on a platform on the side of the building. Then, as we disembarked, I asked, "Is the Son of the Sun coming here also?" Since I now noticed that the platform where we landed had space for two or three more ships. "Yes, he is coming. This entrance will take us to the chairs reserved for him and his guests." Fearful that the Son of the Sun had invited high personalities, and besides there is that little monster who was his daughter, I suggested to O'Cork, "Would it not be better if we sat in another place instead of together with the Son?" "Why?" "Perhaps he has invited some high personality, and being who I am, I would not be good to see it together with them." "Oh, well, don't think of such a thing. It would be a great offense to the Son of the Sun. Since, as I've already told you, here we have no great and no small personalities, and I can tell you also that any Akkartian would feel proud to sit near you, and that is exactly how the Son of the Sun feels. You are the first Earth human being to come to our planet under such circumstances, because if you had come under other conditions, perhaps you would not be enjoying the regalies which we have demonstrated." "I beg your pardon if I have offended you, sir, or the Son, but you, sir, have to understand that a person of my position on Earth bears an inferiority complex, and it is not from one moment to the next that I can be lifted from him. To lose it, one needs a period of adaptation in another ambient condition. It's the page shifting that makes these problems for me reading. Well, if it is for that, don't worry anymore. You can take into account that you have stayed in my home." Smiling, he put one hand on my back and conducted me through a door which opened onto a short corridor. Traversing this, we came to the mentioned sports place, which left me surprised as usual, since it considered of a sports field within a building which I judged to be of a size no more than a basketball stadium. Upon investigating this, it turned out to be a majestic field, only the part reserved to the practice of sports measured more than 80 to 100 meters, that which should be called the field, since incredible it seemed to consist of a lawn similar to grass, surrounded by balconies up to a certain level, and above them a kind of galleries in which we were situated. I cannot give you an exact idea of how many people could be accommodated, since I have never seen so many people gathered for such a sports occasion here on Earth, not even in public. It was so absorbed in contemplating that marvel that when I took notice again, I was seated next to O'Cork in an armchair that would have been an envy of a king here. I noticed after that in the bleachers as well as in the galleries where we were, the seats offered the same equal comfort. It was O'Cork who first spoke, saying, "How do you like it?" "Oh, it's magnificent." And without saying more, I continued admiring and contemplating the movement of the people who flowed in from both sides. I observed also where we were situated, where 8 more chairs still vacant. Then I remembered the Son of the Sun and asked, "Is the Son of the Sun coming later?" "Yes, he is coming. At any moment he will be here. I began to observe the field, and I saw in my mind's eye two things that intrigued me. That field or lawn was for the sports that they were going to practice there soon. It could not be for football such as ours, since there were no goals nor markings on the field that I could see. And how could I explain that grass there inside of the building? To clear up such doubts, I asked, what sport do they practice here? Very shortly you will know, a Cork responded. Since he already had given me no answer to the first, I came back with the second. What kind of grass is that which grows inside of this building? Since the things here inside is that the sun does not enter, and it is that it needs no sun? Well, to need the sun, it would have to pick up all the days that it could. Now that you see, there is neither grass nor lawn. What is it then? It is an artificial grass. Artificial? Yes. It is not planted. It is placed there on that ground and can still be picked up with facility if you like. Well, remember, this was in 58, and now, so many years later, we also have this type of grass and many football fields, especially here in Norway where I live. Continue. Something like that seems impossible, but the sun, from where does it penetrate? See the roof? It is movable when they desire, and when it is not raining, it is retired. I was intrigued when he said it was movable. I could see that it had non-columns to support it in the middle, having only the lateral parts. The free space were one more or less 120 to 130 meters. I was wondering in what manner they could move that enormous roof that covered the whole stadium. I relieved doves and asked, but how is it that they are able to take off and replace again that roof? It looks like it must weigh very much. He smiled and said, to you it may seem difficult, but it is very simple. In the first place, the roof is very light and does not weigh what it seems, and it's easily retired as follows. See where it is a little higher in the middle and is supported by those arcs that go from one side to the other, as much as one side as the other. Yes, I had not noticed this. Well then, it is retired in quarter parts. There are some cables that run through those arcs, which you can not see from here. Those are connected to four solar motors on the sides of the building, and these in turn, each one pulls a part of the roof that then piles up here above us and on the other three sides, the same as I told you. It is replaced when needed. Does this operation take much time? No. In an instant it can be retired and replaced. It is made like a folded sheet of paper, a kind of foil, which when folded occupies a minimum space, and when open covers an extent equal to its size. Yes, now I understand. At this, with the stadium, as I will call it, filled, I heard a gong or something like that, which rang on all sides. All stood up, remained standing, including a Cork, indicating also by me. Then the son of the sun, with his family and his two employees, let us say, and the two more men came in. One of these last I soon recognized to be Tuek, whom I had known in Conn, the other city. None of these people present there clapped their hands, nor gave activity, nor made any noise. They remained standing in complete silence until those recently arrived sat down. Only then they all sat down also. O'Cork greeted those he still had not greeted, carrying on an intimate dialogue with them. About me, only Tuvok sought to greet and ask, through the intermediary of O'Cork, how it was going with me. I responded that I was well. There were, as I said, 10 chairs in our section. 6 on the first level where I, O'Cork and the son of the sun, and his wife Tuvok and the two others sat. The youngsters and the two young helpers took the chairs on another second level behind us. I was seated on the end, then O'Cork, the son, his wife, and the two others too. I felt better because the little monster had taken a seat behind us. Only thus did I not need to be constantly confronted there by her gaze of curiosity. After having conversed at some length between them, O'Cork translated to me a comment from the son of the sun, which says, "Certainly you will like this sport, since it is our knowledge that on earth they practice various kinds." "Yes, I'm a great admirer of the various modalities that are practiced on earth. I hope that you will appreciate ours, since we have some that are very similar to yours." "Yes, sir, it will be my pleasure." At this, two individuals entered the grassed field, if I may call it that, each one with a vessel in his hand, something like a bucket. I saw that all the spectators paid close attention to them. I thought, what sport is it that these two are going to present? Luckily, I did not ask O'Cork, since in a moment I saw that they began to mark the grass with something in those vessels. They made a line in white color some 25 meters in the middle of the grass. Following that, they made another like it parallel to the first and some 10 meters back. After they made one more line some 20 meters long in the contrary direction, connecting the first two, one to the other, and then retired, leaving the grass marked like a zebra. As soon as they left, two lines of young men entered, gave an Olympic turn around the stadium, and came to a stop to face over the middle of the lines that had been painted. There were 20 in all. Some were dressed in dark pants to the knees, and the others in light, with boots like parachutics used, since I would well see that they had a kind of clets. They wore shirts but used no caps. They had a lightweight lined of crosspiece on each shoulder, supported by a strip running down the middle between the shoulder blades. I laughed intimately, wondering what play they were going to present with those 20 youths. Football like ours it could not be, nor even very similar, because of the demarcation of the field and even their suits. I felt a little embarrassed to ask such an explanation of O'Cork, and because of this I decided to wait and see for myself if I could understand what they are going to present. But this was not how it happened, because O'Cork turned to me and commenced to explain that the game was to push. It was thus that I baptized it after that, for not knowing a better name. Those 20 youths, as I said, stationed themselves 10 to one side and 10 to the other. Then I saw two men who were giving some orders, it seemed to me, or better, some instructions. Then they approached two on two over the middle of each of the two marks there, leaving the two major marks in the contrawise sense to the rear guard of each group. Then they all leaned shoulder to shoulder and commenced what they called that sport. This consisted of one group pushing the other until they were thus shoved to the rear of the line. In this manner, one would try to make his competitor cross the line. For this pair, it was a struggle to the end, and Nod would go to the help of another who was being bested. Finally, the team who had moved the most adversaries across the line was the victor. There was a series of regulations which Accord did not explain to me, and which I did not understand by myself. What I understood, without explanation, was that the team in the light pants won because they were able to push six of their opponents outside, while the ones with dark pants only pushed four. After this, the white victors arranged themselves in a half circle in the middle of the sports field, staying a little behind the conquered. The audience applauded the visitors with enthusiasm. They were all smiling. However, the conquered seemed like a football team here on Earth when they have just lost the World Cup. I reflected the reason for such applause and on the importance that could result from a dispute among those to merit such an ovation. When the Son of the Sun stood up and, as if a magic pass, all became quiet. He, by means of a rolled stair extended to our front, which I had not noticed before, descended to the field and stood on the grass, receiving a tumultuous ovation, which, though I still do not know why, I also applauded. With elegant gestures, the Son of the Sun thanked all. Then the ovation ceased. He walked to the victorious athletes, and together with him came that other gentleman from the other side of our compartment. That one had a box in his hands, which he opened in front of the Son of the Sun, and, in a moment, took out from inside of it an object which I saw was like a medallion. Then, detaching himself from the group, one athlete under a sterenzo's salvo of palms received the medal. After that, they began taking out lesser medals, and the Son of the Sun was delivering one to each member of the victorious team. Having done this, he retired from the field under a strong acclamation, being imitated also by the victorious team, and then by the losers as well. The Son of the Sun returned to his chair and began a dialogue with Accord. I do not understand what they were saying, remained thinking about the sports that I had just witnessed, and thought to myself, okay, they sure make a lot of ceremony over a pushing game such as this. It is that they know no better sports than this. On Earth, the only thing I know of similar to this would be the bullfights. Another intriguing thing was that the athlete who received the first medal and received the other award also. Why did also he receive two? Perhaps he was the captain of the team. To remove doubts, Accord had already been drawn to conversation with me in his translation, and I asked, that athlete who received the first single medal, why did he receive the other later? Was he the captain of the team? No. That was the individual champion for which series he both won for having been the individual champion and the other with the team. How individual champion? The first to force his adversary to cross the white line. I understand. And in case the first to make his adversary cross the line had been one of the losers, what would happen then? The Dark Pants would have the individual champion and the Light Pants the winning team. In case of five victors on each side, in that case the champion would be the ones who had the individual champion. But if a big athlete was matched with a small one, the big one would have 99% probability of becoming the champion. That was an answer, question. No, this would not happen because the team are well matched. They have to have equality of weight and height in each pair with minimal differences. Well, then what is different from what I thought? As I didn't see anyone beginning to leave, I asked, are they going to have new competitions? Yes, but very different from that which just presented and similar to your football on earth. Are you saying that here you know the practice of football like we have on earth? No, we at Carlton do not practice that sport. However, many of us have watched celebrations of the same competitions on the sports fields of earth. Did you say that the Carlton citizens have attended football games in our stadiums? No, I'm not saying that. We have attended within the stadiums there. But yes, by television and by means of other apparatus which are available to us. All this is incredible, he says then. Let's take a look at the time. It's 47 minutes of this recording. I think I continue. At this there entered into a stadium various men carrying some objects in the form of a U, which I later saw were goals. However, what left me flabbergasted was that instead of only two, they brought five, two of a size like ours and three smaller. I thought, if this is for lack of goals, they certainly are not going to run out of them. I continued observing as these were placed in position on the grass. They placed the two large size, one more or less 100 meters from the other, face to face, and the other three smaller ones between them. What I saw next is almost impossible to describe, but I'm going to try, with the help of a cork. The goal columns had no base below, for which I was intrigued by how the goals were going to be stood firmly a foot. Another thing no less intriguing to me was that those men dispersed over the field at a certain moment seemed to lift part of the ground which was later replaced. Finally, the man left the field, leaving the grass completely marked and the five goals standing. As I did not see them using the vessels of paint like with the other game, I asked Akork, how is it that those goals, since he already knew of our football, he must know they were goals, that they stand so firmly without braces? And why did they not use the paint material to mark out the lines as before? Can you explain this? It is that the goalposts have screws in the center of the lower parts of the columns, which are screwed into some receiving units in the ground with a key which is introduced through an aperture in the base of the columns, which cannot be seen from here. And when the field is marked conforms to what I said about this not being natural grass, but artificial sod. They removed a strip and turned it like to the other side, and the color was different, and it was already marked with lines. But that part which they turned, it was not lined. No, it is not. However, it is well encased. I believe that if you were there without feeling it with your hands, you will think it was grass. Why didn't they use the same process for marking it for the play before instead of the paint? Well, it is that there are many modalities of sports for which it would be impossible to use this system for all. This is only used for the principal ones. Are you saying that this, which they are going to present now, is one of the favorite sports here? Yes, one of the favorites. How many people play this sport? In this case, 26, 13 on each side. Now it can also be contested more or less as they desire. After this reply, a cork turned to the son of the sun and only spoke to me after they had finished the contest, which soon began, about 1 hour earth time. While they were talking, I continued observing the sport. After the explanations of a cork, and with that I could see, I am going to give you an idea of how this sport was practiced. As I said, they have five goals, being that the two larger ones are the size of a normal, in parentheses, football goal here on Earth, while the other three were some 4 meters wide and about the height of the bigger two. The distance between them was 30 meters from one larger to the first smaller goal, and 20 meters between the smaller ones. When the 26 athletes entered, 13 in dark pants and 13 in light ones, they spread out through the middle of the five goals. From where we were, we could see the positions of the 26 athletes well, since the two big goals were one on our left and the other on our right. They were thus divided, five lights and four darks between the big goal to our left and the first small one, and between the small one and the next two lights and two darks, identical between the next two small ones, and between last small one from our left to the big one to the right, there were four lights and five darks. I call them lights and darks, however their suits were not white and black. I only called them that to differentiate them, because I can not distinguish colors well, he writes in parentheses. Go on. Besides these 26 athletes, there were four more men, a kind of arbitrators. There was nobody else on the field. Of the four, two posted themselves on the lateral and the other two on the other. Then one of those who was on the lateral in front of us, as if with a magic pass, it seemed to me, produced a ball in his hands. This ball was no different from one of ours. The field was marked as shown in the diagram provided here. Now, what I could not understand or what I saw was this. One of them went toward a small goal in the center and released the ball into something similar to a plate well above the middle of the upper bar to a center goal. Then he returned to the lateral and rejoined his companion. For their side, the two of the other laterals stood on each side of the central line, which ran parallel to the goal arms of the center one, with the athletes besides the two that guarded the two bigger goals. I saw that none of the others took positions identically with the smaller goals. Staying, it seemed to me, on some marking or other. Then one of the arbitrators raised one hand, and when he lowered it, the ball, which had been above the crossbar, fell from some 3 meters above, and I don't know how it was done or why it happened thus. It fell directly on the bar and bounced to the right. Like that, it touched the ground, traveling until position of it was disputed between the athletes, to culminate with the ball being transported to the small goal and then also to the big one, impelled by the feet of the light pants, without, it seemed to me, any of the dark pants touching it. The goalie, I call him that because there were only those two that guarded the two bigger goals, who remained there during the whole dispute, while with smaller ones, at one there was one, and another time there was another. They went to search for the ball and placed it in a rectangle small area in front of his goal and gave a pass to one of his teammates. I was surprised at this because I was expecting the ball to be placed for a new release from the plate described by me before. I deduced that perhaps the point was not valid for one reason or another. The two who perceived the pass gave a dribble by an adversary and passed it from there. In that instant he made the ball soar over the 3 small goals, coming to the front of the big goal to the light pants team. However, they were not able to make the ball penetrating there on this first attack. And the thing a little in front of the goal of the light pants and another in front of the goal of the dark pants suits at times passed by them was something I could not understand at the barbarity of goals. Then one of the arbiters settled a dispute with one wave of his hand, a possibility with 4 arbitrators, 2 always ran on each side, always following the place, while the other 2 remained seated with a paper in their hands, also one on each side. Then all the spectators got up, clapping their hands. I, however, still did not know for which of the 2, because the contents seemed equal. I thought, they must be tied. There the Son of the Sun interrupted his much extended dialogue with a cork and turned again toward the center of the field, and then followed almost the same ceremonies as before. However, this time I took the opportunity to ask explanations of a cork, asking which was the team that won. It was the team on our right, the Dark Pants. How did they score the points and how are they then counted? In the following manner. 1 point is divided into 5 parts, and thus each time one of the other team surpassed one of the small goals, it counted 1/5, and the big one counted 2/5, and if by fortune one team runs around the big goal 2 consecutive times, then they gain 2.5/5 each time. And if they run around it 3 times? No, this doesn't happen, because after running around the second time, the ball is positioned in the same place above the crossbar of the goal as before, for a new start. What was the difference in points between the victors over the others, and how many points was it? The difference is minimal, as the victorious scored 10 and 4 5 points, while the loser scored 10 to 1 5. I noticed I didn't understand that the charges have been revived. Those four men, what is their function? Well, the two that moved accompany the play on the sides are the arbiters, while the other two are remained seated, score the points. We do not agree, sir, that those arbitrators are unnecessary, since according to our laws here, nobody is able to rob another of what is his, even though it is 1 point of 1/5 in this sport. Their function is not to avoid the robbery of a point from the others, but it is to coordinate and direct the game, because a dispute must be settled at a time, as the athletes at times do not notice that the ball crosses a dividing line or letter, which is considered a fault. Yes, yes, it is the same. A Cork explains still another thing with respect to this sport, such as the manner of collecting the lateral faults, thus dividing lines there, etc. But I am not going to try to give more details, because with the infinity of kinds of sports existing here on Earth, I don't think anyone is going to want to put into practice one like this. Having completed the ceremonies, the son of the sun, I believe he delivered more than 10 kilos of medals, and a strong applause returned to us. This is the last part of this part or chapter, and further is drawn up the a sketch of the playing arena with the text Accordion football teams consisted of 26 players, etc. But I do not think I will go into that. But the last chapters here will be on separate audio files then.